And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm excited about our guest. Good friend Chase Kletzy is coming back on the show, and she's got all kinds of new and interesting things to talk about. And before her, though, we have Alejandro Rojas coming up with the news and just a couple things. And tomorrow morning, I get up early and I start heading north to Shag Harbor. So I'm going up there for the 50th anniversary celebration, and I'm going to be interviewing, hopefully live, some of the witnesses, such as Laurie Wickens and a few others. And that's going to happen this coming Saturday on the 28th, and that's at 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can see it right here on YouTube or on our website, Podcast UFO. If you're supporting the show, I want to thank you very much. If you can't support the show but want to listen to the whole show free, there's a couple ways to do that. First of all, podcastufo.com every Wednesday at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also on our YouTube channel, you can subscribe to that. And we are also Thursday as a podcast on the Dark Matter Digital Network, and that's 10 to midnight. And we're also on Outworld Fleet Radio that Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's enough for me. Alejandro, how are you doing?
I am doing well. And I'm sorry I'm ignorant of this, but every time we do the video, you know, I watch you and you have this green drape behind you, and I'm sure there's like that space or some other planet. What is it that's usually behind you?
Oh, well, right now for the last...
I never see the YouTube.
I know. For the last two shows, I have Paul Benowitz UFO lights behind me.
Oh.
You know? Yeah. They look pretty spooky.
Creepy.
Yeah. I'm just showing them. I'm moving over so everybody can see them. But yeah, I have to change
it. I can see
it
more
out
of the drape.
I thought of putting something that moved, but that would be very distracting.
Uh-huh. So Yeah. They need to listen to pay attention to this great information.
True. So how's everything going?
I am doing well, keeping busy with the Congress. We have tons of people registering, and if you don't mind me telling people,
they've
got to register by the end of the month if they want to get the major big discount, so the price goes up quite a bit. And they can go to UFOCongress.com, of course, to see a lot of the speakers. So we have almost half of them listed. But even more important than that, Chase Kletzy will be there. She'll hopefully be helping, you know, people at the registration desk. And then you're going to be there as well, wandering around and just being a cool dude like usual.
I want to do something like real important, like, I don't know, try to think of something.
Okay, like
I don't know.
Some kind of top hat
alien
and
watch
outfit,
yeah.
Where you'd like tell people, hello and welcome, kind of do like the whole.
Hello and welcome to, yeah, that's a good. Oh, also, I am going to be doing, hopefully it'll work out, I'll be able to do another live show from there as I've done every year. But you know what? I'm going to accommodate you this year a little bit better because I'm not on a radio station, so I can work around the schedule and just let everyone know. Because I always do it during the buffet, right? The meet and greet.
Yeah, I know. I'm always running around busy, and then you're over here, you know, I've got a conference to put on, and you're over here, but I need to do my radio show. Help.
Yeah, so I'm going to change that this year, make it a little easier for you.
Good. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Work around our schedule so we don't have to work around yours.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So what's going
on? So the news. I posted a cool story about Prince Philip, so I didn't realize this. I hadn't done this before, but the Sun, and this is the news I wanted to talk about, from the Devil's Tower event that, unfortunately, I was excited because Chase was going to be able to go to that, but she couldn't make it, so I didn't get to hang out with her there. But all of us other researchers, the Sun, the UK tabloid, which we're always usually typically making fun of because they don't always do the best work. They've written some really good stories about the different talks there. They wrote about mine, Travis Walton's. And then today they wrote about Chuck Zukowski and Debbie Ziegelmeyer, who talk about this 37th parallel. And it's kind of exciting. I talked to Chuck recently, and they're doing – like they did a book with Ben Masaryk, and they're going to do a movie. And I guess Robert Downey Jr. is excited about it, so they might have some famous people playing, you know, Chuck and Debbie, who's fun, because if you know them, they're great people. But that's going to be pretty interesting to see who they have play each of those people, assuming this movie goes through. But so far, so good. So that's some cool stuff that's on the Sun that you can see on the website. Otherwise, other news. One of the stories they wrote about was really cool, and we haven't talked about this since your last show, and that was Mark D'Antonio, and I think he shared this story on your podcast, but what's cool about this is he hasn't shared it with the mainstream yet, and this is essentially kind of the first mainstream media posting of this story that's been written. So Mark D'Antonio, MUFON's photo analyst, used to have a top secret clearance. He doesn't anymore, not that he lost it. He just isn't doing that work anymore that needed it. And this is cool, too, because I've always been interested in Chase's response, because she has some connection with this type of thing. But when Mark was working on these models, they had him. He got to take a ride in a Navy nuclear sub. And while he was in that sub, the sonar, like the guy at the sonar said, fast mover, fast mover. And he said he was clocking something going at something like 200 knots. But they didn't really let Mark know much about it. When he asked the commanding officer about it, the commanding officer said, Mark, are you enjoying your ride? And Mark said, sure, yeah, this is great. And he said, well, let's keep it that way. So essentially, shut up. So later on, he was working on these programs, and he talked to another officer, and he said, hey, tell me about the fast mover program. And the guy told him, I can't tell you about that, which led Mark to believe that there really is some sort of program, which I think people will be excited about, because he's often typically kind of considered a skeptic, since he hasn't found a UFO photo, essentially, that he's liked. You and I talk about this quite a bit. So that was a really cool story. That was another great story that the Sun had. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, another big story this week is the Russians. So there were some odd photos taken in Russia, in Armenia, and some of the countries around there. And for those of us like you and I who are used to this, we can identify what it is. And it was a missile. Uh-huh. And essentially, these missiles, what they'll do is they just swerve weird, or they can't spin out and create these giant spirals like they did in Norway. And a lot of people, I don't know if you still get hate mail every time we talk about this, but and it was Mark D'Antonio who burst my bubble on this one. I'm like, what? That can't be a missile. And he explained to me how, and then he showed me other evidence of how this has happened in the past. In fact, there are times where you can go on YouTube and see these missiles coming out of a sub, then going haywire and just spinning out of control, and you see this spiral effect happening. So when it happens at space, it's even more extraordinary. I remember there's a big one in L.A. where lots of stars and stuff had seen it, and a big portion of the sky was covered by the gas in this thing. So
that was
really
cool. A failed missile launch on that one.
Yep. And failed missile launch.
Yeah, that it's the upper atmosphere, and like you said, you know, low space where these things really look totally amazing. And I really, really get why someone would think it would be something out of this world. You know, it just doesn't appear like, you know, that could be.
It does. It looks wild. And when it's, like you said, in the upper atmosphere, it looks humongous. So But it's just gases that are reflecting the sunlight and stuff like that. So finally, this is really cool, too. I think just because I've been kind of, and you've probably have been privy to this story, there's a guy named Philip Mantle in the UK, and he's been talking about this guy Spiros Mellaris for quite some time, the guy who alleges to have, you know, created the bodies when it came to the alien autopsy film. Right. Well, a lot of people have doubted it, and really, Philip Mantle's kind of been carrying this all on his own, but finally, because his Spiros Mellaris has been, like, hesitant to talk publicly, and so he's been kind of elusive, but finally, he's been talking to the major media, and he's been admitting, okay, yeah, I'm the guy, and describing in detail how he created and hoaxed those videos. And he says, you know, which is one of the reasons he didn't come out, he is really embarrassed. He did not realize it would get so huge as it has. And so he says he feels really bad about it. It was a joke, but now it's turned into this huge thing. And of course, as he predicts in his story, even though he's come forward and talked about, even in very minute detail, how he created all of these different things. Sure enough, when I posted it on Facebook, you know, people are like, I don't believe this. This is a cover up. He's lying. So,
yeah, that's what you get.
Welcome to ufology.
Yeah. Now, he's not the one that made the $200,000 or whatever it was from it, was he?
No, there's a guy there who owned it, and I can't remember his name right now. And if you go to my Facebook post on this, I posted a couple follow-up stories because Philip Mantle's a contributor at openminds.tv. And so he's written about this and other things at length. And he wrote about how the owner, and he uses his name, and I can't remember his name, tried to provide film as proof that these were real. But the film he provided, some of it was not from the right time period and was not correct. Some of it was from the right time period but were copies. But the problem was all of this film he provided, none of it had any of the alien autopsy stuff on it. He said, oh, this is from another part of the film.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, so but he would not provide a part of the film that had, you know, what people were interested in. So that could be tested, which is just all signs of, you know, this guy trying to trick everybody. And he did trick people and he made a lot of money off of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, I've every once in a while someone will send me something about the alien autopsy. I remember when it went viral on TV. This was, I don't know, what was that, the 1990s sometime?
Yeah, sometime in the 90s. I can look it up here. Yeah,
and it was, I remember seeing it and thinking, wow, you know, that, and I wasn't even really talking about UFOs back then or anything, but I saw that clip and I thought, wow, is that even possible? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But think of the probably millions of people out there that think that was a real deal.
Yeah, Ray Santilli was the guy's name in 1995.
Okay. Yeah.
Was when the video came out. Yeah, it was produced by Bob Kiviat, who's someone I actually was speaking to today about. He's still doing UFO shows, and Kiviat is he's really into UFOs. He's a TV producer. He's done a lot of some of the stuff that people would recognize. But this was one where, yeah, everybody kind of got. A lot of people got duped, but then again, yeah. A lot of people made money too.
Yeah, right, right. So is that it for today?
That's it for now.
All right. So we'll be back next week. Thanks, man.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. All right. Our guest is Chase Kalitsky, and we've had her on. I think she was one of the early people on our show way back. And I always enjoy having her on so much. And she has an amazing background. If you're listening live or you're listening to this as a podcast, you can check out her bio in the show notes. And she was schooled as a private investigator, and she joined MUFON back in 1996 and was selected as part of the STAR team manager at the time. Anyway, glad to have her back. As usual, Chase, welcome to the show again.
Thanks so much for having me, Martin. You know, I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, I know it's been, I can't remember how long it's been, but it's, oh, I know the last time you were on is when we were in Phoenix. You were at the round table in Phoenix. So that's going
back.
But always fun to have
you. My favorite conference.
And I know everyone wants to hear the triangle story, but you have told that a billion, million times. So we're going to be talking, we may talk about that if we actually run out of stuff to talk about toward the end of the show. But for now, what's been going on lately? You're into all kinds of things you've been doing.
Yeah, it's really a great time to be a UFO investigator. And, well, actually, if you don't know what it is, I'll go look. So if it's a legit report or sighting or event, I just enjoy being out, boots on the ground, and, you know, just digging in and getting some of these mysteries solved one case at a time.
Right. And when we were talking briefly before the show, you mentioned that there's a new model of investigation. Can you talk about that? This is for MUFON, right?
Yeah. Coming back to MUFON, Jan Harzan had talked to me about, you know, he had an idea about a team of people that he could rely on for some of the cases that don't quite fit the CMS model or the case management. And that's where the public can file the reports. So we call that CMS. And not everything fits in that little box and things that MUFON is interested in. Well, he didn't have a team that could work on those or a system set up to take that without, you know, just asking a couple investigators already in MUFON. But, you know, our state directors and field investigators are already so overworked, it seems. We get so many reports. So he asked me to design this, and it was kind of a headquarters team. And when he told me what he thought his needs were or what kind of team he was looking at, I immediately thought that I could design a new investigation model that hasn't really been done before, especially in MUFON. MUFON works typically in pairs, and investigators start with background. And I kind of thought, if we're going to be dealing with high-profile witnesses, whistleblowers, you know, stories of high national security interest, hackers type things, then we need a high performance team. So I developed that, and we work as a task force, no different than a police department that would have their regular police, you know, out there handling the everyday needs that cannot be dropped. But then you have this special unit that can come in and handle the big things that take extra time and a little more scrutiny and, you know, a lot of different leads going in all different directions. So that's what I've done is I designed the special assignment team to handle that. But I love this investigation model because it's turned out to be so successful. We even incorporated a reporter and a correspondent. So it's just really been, you know, to kind of keep up with all our information and keep things organized, because as a task force, we go in, everybody contributes, everybody's throwing stuff on the table, you know, we're throwing things up on the board and making timelines and making things work. So I'm really proud of this this team that's, you know, brand new and move on. It's actually 3 years old now. I kind of can't believe it because I still feel like we're new.
And now, some of the complaints you hear about in MUFON are, you know, things like not being able to access the data. You know, do you think any of that will ever change, or what? You know, do people discuss that? Say, you know, the board, or, you know, where does that go?
They do. It's always a concern, and it comes up quite a bit because Jan, sometimes we're aggravated at this because he focuses on, you know, everything that comes across his desk. So whether somebody has a complaint or an idea, he gives it the same amount of attention as everything else. And it is a complaint. I think what most people don't understand is when we're asking for information for witnesses, we can't just put all that information out for the public to see because, you know, their address is on it, and or they might be talking about their minor children in part of the report. But it's also all their contact information. It's just, so if we try to leave that out, and then we have the investigators, and sometimes we're digging into things that would reveal that information. So the investigator notes kind of can't make those public either. So we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, how to be as transparent as people would like us to be, and yet it's not an option because of protecting our witnesses. Right. There's just no way, you know, most of my investigation notes could never be made you know, public to anybody. However, we do have people that, you know, will call in to MUFON and want more details on certain cases. And of course, he and Roger Marsh will immediately send you to the FI and the state director. So we're trying to be as transparent as possible, but we're dealing with, you know, private people and sure. sometimes extraordinary reports that they wanted us to have the information so that their event was documented, but they don't want to hear about it anymore. You know, they right. want to wash their hands and move on.
Yes, and I know how important anonymity is for witnesses. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't work. You know, there's right. a lot of people that just would not make a report if they knew that their name was going to get out there. Some people don't care, but for those people that do, you'd lose all those.
You know? Right. Or what about the people that don't care because they didn't fully understand the type of attention they would get
True.
And then now want it taken down? But it is a discussion. It's an issue that is consistently reexamined. Is there anything new we can provide, anything new we can do with, you know, new avenues that we have like YouTube or, you know, so it is a concern. And MUFON takes a lot of hits for it, which I think is unfair. Because the only reason these reports aren't out there is to protect the very people asking for them.
You know, I read a lot of, Roger Marsh does a lot of writing for Alejandro's website, Open Minds TV. And I read those reports, and a lot of times I wonder, you know, it's either closed or it's still open or whatever. But I always wonder the follow-up. You know, is there any way at all to find out what happens to like one of the major cases as far as the investigation at all?
Absolutely. Just contact Jan through an email or a phone call. What separates MUFON from most organizations that investigate anomaly is we have a business office. That's amazing. A fully staffed business
right.
office that
in LA or
focuses.
Somewhere.
Yeah. It focuses directly on, you know, the business of having, you know, these operations where the investigators are getting the training that they need. And, you know, now we have MU, everything's online, MUFON University. There's courses in astrology. And, you know, our days of sniffing dirt are over, Martin, because there's a lot of really high-tech stuff going on and MUFON really holding on desperately to that scientific method, which some people are critical of. And yet, it's the only way we're going to meet admissibility. So for us to ever hit that burden of proof for any kind of public or the science, we're holding on to the very strict protocols that we take hits for. I get it, guys. We all want to do the, you know, fringe out here, and they'll let you do that as well, but just not in MUFON. We have to stick with a scientific agenda. And, you know, but it's an ever-changing world.
I think that was some of what the complaints were for the symposium this last year that was a little far out there, a lot of the speakers. So I'm sure you heard a little bit of that flack, right?
We did. And I'll admit something to you that a lot of people don't know. Each year, Jan picks, you know, people that he feels are best suited to, you know, maybe help with speakers and to help with some of the conference material. And last year I was part of that team, and that kind of helped, like, who do we bring in? Who do we have? And of course, my first words were Richard Dolan and Michael Schratt. And I like to stay very science minded, but And I have to tell you that I did make a comment. I was not happy, and I did not think it was a good idea to bring in a couple of the speakers. And I won't mention them because I think it's going to be obvious. But and I was really very defiant about that. And then it hit me when Jan explained, but, you know, Chase, we can't always just present our side or the side we just want the people to know. Why don't we give the public the entire story, which also includes this other end? And I thought, you know what? All these TV shows or, you know, blogs and, you know, all the information we're getting out here, they typically set up so that they're telling you what's going on and what you need to believe and this is what happened and done. I love that Jan stepped out of the box and he took a lot of heat for it, except It was the biggest symposium in history. It tripled last year in numbers, you know, in revenue. And it was, I think it was a stroke of brilliance that he presented the whole case and let the public decide this time. These are the best witnesses on both sides. What do you guys think? Because it's a symposium. And it's also our fundraiser. You know, everybody hates to bring money in ufology, but somebody's got to pay the bills and the office space and the, you know, and it's our fundraiser. Why wouldn't we try to create the kind of list that would give us the numbers we had last year? So it, for a business end to move on, it was brilliant, but he's still taking hits for giving these people a little stage time. And I get that.
Yeah.
But I also understand, even I found myself going in there because I only knew a part of what some of these speakers that I didn't care for. I only knew a little bit of their story because I shut down so quickly. Let me hear all of what they have to say. I came out with the same opinion, but at least I fairly gave it some weight.
Right. Oh, you know, Jan is a smart guy. There's no doubt about it. So there, you know, the MUFON took a little bit of other hits this year. How has, as far as you know, I don't know how much you know about the inner workings, but what is the membership going like?
We did take some hits, and it's unfortunate. You know, some we kind of ask for.
Uh-huh.
And some were unfair. And I think it was, I call it kind of almost a sifting. You know, every few years in ufology, you know, something riles up and, you know, people leave because, you know, they're disgusted with it or whatever. And in this case, we had a couple incidences that caused some of our vets, some of our veteran ufologists that have been doing this for 40 and 50 years versus my little 25. But, you know, to leave MUFON, and yeah, it kind of hurt. It stung. And, you know, nobody likes to lose some of our greats or some of the people that have really movers and shakers. And yet at the same time, we're not going to affect change or kind of keep people honest. We all know that I left because I caught a few people with their hands in the cookie jar. And when I left, I called them out by name. They're not there anymore. We can't fix things by just quitting. And I really do think that MUFON has to change in the direction it's going to remain viable and visible and relevant. And yet we have people that, you know, just don't think that, you know, everything should stay the same, because why are we falling into that trap? And, you know, so it's a business decision at this point. And if anybody thinks that, you know, ufology is not a business, or, you know, if you have a paranormal team, hasn't been in the field that long, it's very competitive. It's very tumultuous at times. But the good news is a few of the losses we took stung. There were a couple that, you know, don't let the door hit you on the butt on the way out, buddy, because you know, how dare you have an opinion and say something so egregious, especially publicly. We don't need people like you in our organization. So some needed to go, others stung. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, we have remarkable people coming into MUFON by the droves. And some of these positions that we were really stuck thinking, how are we ever going to fill those shoes? And we did. So, wow. You know, MUFON's
happens.
Yeah, and MUFON's on solid ground. You know, it's an organization that even if there were four people out here and one guy at the office or manning the phones, MUFON's going to exist. And I haven't always been a fan of MUFON. Everyone knows this. I was very public in my exit and why I left, and I called out the people I caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and it took them a little time. I think the hit that MUFON took with the social media incident, without getting into names and all that, we'll just call it the social media incident. You know, everybody clearly saw what was going on. Obviously, he wasn't going to get to stay. But I really thought that people jumped on it way too quick. This is an international organization that has to worry about being sued, lawyers, you move too quickly before you know the facts. I really like that we had people that insisted on talking to him through the process of elimination, kind of, you know, and bringing him in. So, you know, because there's legalities, you know, when you have an organization this big.
Sure. Absolutely.
And people just demanded, you know, Jan needs to fire him right this minute. Well, we all knew it was coming, but we had to follow the rules and the law. So,
yeah, you really do. Yeah. Your target. Now, what about, you know, Peter Davenport's New Fork, National UFO Reporting Center? Does he work with MUFON? I know I had him on the show, but I can't remember if I asked him that question. As far as investigations.
He is a great partner. And every once in a while, I don't believe he's in MUFON and working with us directly. But we have such a good relationship with Peter. I love Peter Davenport.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
I think, yeah, and he's one of our biggest heroes. I mean, that man has been manning our national UFO reports for decades all by himself.
Right.
What a pioneer and just a remarkable man. I'm very fond of him.
Yes.
We have a good relationship with him, and there are many times he'll call Roger Marsh and say, hey, I got this really good case, and I've talked to the witnesses, and they would like to talk to an investigator. So he will call MUFON and talk to Jan or Roger or Steve Hudgens, and the Steve Hudgens is a DOI, Director of Investigations, and get an investigator. So, yeah. And it's a good partnership. MUFON works with a lot of people.
Yeah. Now, the only thing, the poor guy, though, is getting pranked. I don't know if you heard that.
Yes.
It's really too bad. And hopefully that'll stop.
Yeah.
You know, because he's, I think he's now using the answering machine, so it doesn't happen anymore. Or happens less anyway. So what have you been up to? I know you're up to all kinds of things. I want to hear what's going on.
It's so crazy. I love what I'm doing. And it's just a great time to be out here for a lot of reasons. The investigation opportunities have increased to the point where we can actually work with scientists, and we're working with legitimate independent labs, and, you know, we're really able to dig in a little further. And of course, I have done something. Not much has happened with it yet, but remember the citizens' hearing for disclosure?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought Steve Bassett was amazing, and that whole event was so brilliant. And I remember sitting there in the audience, and I watched these, you know, former senators and congressmen and women come up on a Monday morning, and they're sitting there very politely because they got paid a lot of money to be polite.
That's
and
right.
I heard
they got paid.
Yeah, well, and of course, you know, this is the unfortunate side effect is these things cost money. I mean,
yes.
Ufologists were like, why would you spend that on them? This is why, because things like this happen. But I watched these guys. And by Wednesday, you've got Senator Duvall going, I agree, we need to open those files. What I'm witnessing is when we have policymakers, lawmakers, or people that really affect national change, big things that we need done in ufology, that we need their help in declassification, or, you know, getting through a different door, or having the endorsement of this senator to talk to somebody on this top secret base. What I saw was they can be convinced with the proper witnesses and the proper material. And like I said, by Wednesday, you know, these people, you know, and then you've got Kirkpatrick over there saying, oh, I agree, there's a cover-up. Well, if they can be convinced because of our evidence and testimony, we have an opportunity, a real one, if we present our information correctly. So last year, I started paperwork to become an official registered, no joke, my name's on the books, I have an ID, it's on my website, I even copied it so everyone knew this was a legit lobbyist for the UFO movement. And Steve Bassett was such an inspiration because we can fill out all the FOIAs, and how many times we're rejected, or they say they can't find them. And on some of the cases that we really cannot ignore or let fall into a waste paper basket, we need partnership. So we need to start utilizing these avenues. So I actually became a UFO lobbyist.
Oh, I
officially,
heard that. Yes.
Officially.
Uh-huh. Wow. So now there's two.
Yes. And, you know, Steve, he's about the disclosure. And I'm more about science and technology. And when I talk to them, I don't ask them for disclosure because I kind of have a different attitude about DC. I don't think the best way for me or, you know, some of us to get the agenda we want done by going up and we want it all and we demand and, you know, we want disclosure right now. I just don't believe it's going to happen. So how do we get what we need to further, you know, further help our witnesses or, you know, to get the information to the public? Well, we almost have to play their rules. But when we do play their rules, we're winning. Because the citizens' hearing came out, and what we got was confirmation. And I think a lot of people missed that. And the confirmation was when the Rendlesham, they were talking about the Rendlesham incident where John Burroughs wasn't getting the proper attention from his VA benefits because they wouldn't admit anything happened in Rendlesham. These policymakers were so offended that this veteran, retired sergeant, couldn't get medical over something that happened to him while he was on duty, helped him. And they had to admit something happened in Rendlesham because he now has gotten his full benefit. They've done right by him. That's confirmation. That is a huge step for the government and the senator to get involved. So I'm looking at all these things that are happening and knowing we can no longer ignore mainstream science or even our politicians. If we have Podesta emailing Hillary Clinton about the UFO issue, we have a chance, guys, and we need to step on it now. We can't wait and do this in 2-3 years. We have to do it now.
You know, it just reminded me this conversation that I saw George Knapp post on Facebook that he's going to have Tom DeLonge on in the next 2 weeks or so, and he's live on the air. He's going to finally make that announcement he's been promising for like a year or something like that. When you mentioned John Podesta.
Yeah, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed because, Martin, I'm not sure how you felt, but when, you know, Tom DeLonge first came out, I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm buying this. Mm-hmm. You know, a rock star, you know, why not a Linda or Richard Dolan who's been out here? How does he get that privilege and access? I just really wasn't buying it. And I thought it was more, you know, his little stunts or whatever. You know, he's an entertainer. Until friggin' WikiLeaks leaks the emails and we find out this guy's legit. And Podesta's talking about Tom DeLonge and the meetings. And I was just like, oh, this is good stuff. So I just wish Tom would embrace more of, you know, the legitimate part of our community and work with us more, because I think he'd get, you know, some of his background faster if he does that. But he seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, there's almost like a disconnect. I understand what you're saying, like a go it alone type of thing. You know, I'm not going to say that he thinks himself too important, but perhaps he may think the celebrity part is the what's opening the doors, and he's just going to keep move forward as he has been. You know, I don't really know. This is all speculation.
I think you're right, and unfortunately, he's never been part of really the UFO community, and I think he doesn't know what he's missing, because to partner with the kind of historical information that would just strengthen his knowledge base, which is going to make you a better debater and a better negotiator for some of the stuff that he can affect in DC. But, you know, again, you know, and a celebrity got in the door when the rest of us haven't. We have to pay attention to why. Was it his approach, or is it really celebrity? And it would stink if it was celebrity, because we have so much more to offer.
I think there's some type of power in that. And also, you know, I mean, there's power in someone that has a lot of money. You know, that being said, I know Chris Mellon is working with him. And, you know, the Mellon Family Bank. I mean, you can't get more power powerful than that, unless you're Bill Gates or someone. But so, yeah, they've got a lot going. We'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens with George Knapp in just a couple of weeks.
I'm glad George is on it, though. I like George. I trust George.
Yes.
What I don't trust is who Tom DeLonge's getting in bed with. Like you said, you have these major banks. You know, are they using him for disinformation? You know, we've seen this happen historically throughout the UFO field. When, you know, even the Benowitz case with Doty, Richard Doty,
right?
You know, that absolutely decimates this guy. And, you know, on a documentary being filmed, he's almost bragging and giggling about how silly this man was and how easy he was, you know, and I want to throat punch him. You know, I hope I never see this man at a conference because I'm so offended by what he's done and ruining people's lives. But then he did the same thing with Linda and then openly admitted that they had a campaign for disinformation. So unfortunately, with Tom DeLonge going in not only solo, but keeping, you know, getting in bed with some of these, you know, big money and interest, I'm not sure. It depends on what he has to say if I'm going to buy it hook, line, and sinker.
Well,
we've been here before.
Yeah, going back to, I didn't mean to lead you in that direction when it came to Chris Mellon, because Chris Mellon thinks there's something going on. He used to work for the Department of the DOD, and he had the highest level of clearance, and so he definitely thinks something's going on. And
right. But it's this money behind, and, you know, you're using people.
I see what you're saying.
You know, don't have. You're right. It's, you know, even the government bringing him in. It depends on what he has to say. I would feel better if some of this discussion was done with a few of our people, and meaning like a Richard Dolan or, you know, somebody of his caliber that would not only understand the history, but would ask for vetting. You know, I'm not going to just look at a file. I'm going to want to vet that DOD document. And I'm not sure Tom DeLonge would do that. I'm not saying he isn't. It's just these were going to be my concerns until I hear what he has to say. And I hope we're all jumping up and down.
Right. I know like you said, I think it's pretty funny. Every few years, there's some type of fiasco. We can go back to the Roswell slides and, you know, a number of different things that have happened over the years. And, you know, I think the one that died out was the three-fingered alien there that looked like it was covered in plaster. We're not hearing anything about that anymore.
Well, and Gaia is still putting out that they're further testing and there's more information, but that DNA test was leaked. It was leaked and... You know, even I posted it because once it was already on socials, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and post it. Because the other thing I was fascinated with was it was the same paleo DNA lab up in Canada that, you know, I've used for the Star Child skull and that we've used for the elongated skulls in Peru that L.A. Marzulli is leading that investigation and expedition team. But I'm part of it. We've taken over 300 DNA samples out of Peru. And having these tested, and in fact, we're starting to get some results in, but that's going to have to be announced. LA wants to hold a press conference in Texas, and because this is pretty good. But, you know, it's the same lab, and this is a legit scientific lab. I don't use UFO analysts. I kind of feel like that's the prosecution trying to use their own experts and win a case and it be balanced and fair. I will only use people that have nothing to do with this to have absolutely a dispassionate, no interest in UFOs, and I typically don't even tell them. When we sent the DNA up for the Star Child, we didn't say, ooh, this is the Star Child, and we think it's this. It's like, you do DNA of, you know, ancient remains in a paleo, you know, era. Here's some DNA. Here's some samples. We'd like you to test it.
That is the only way to go. And so let's hear what Gaia's DNA report says.
Completely human.
Shocking.
Completely human. Yeah, and in fact, it's kind of the same kind of test result that we got back with the Star Child, because the DNA that we submitted, they got the nuclear from, which I'm very proud of, by the way. And
yeah, not easy. Yeah.
And there was nothing. There was no phenotypic distinction that even remotely deviated or diverted from human. So there was not even a reason to say, you know, maybe we didn't get the test done, or maybe there was a contaminant, or, you know, there's this phenotypic genetic code or red flag that we might need to test further. They were so completely human. Wow. So
now what about, now I want to talk a little bit about the Star Child skull, but before that, what about Stephen Greer? I watched his last documentary, and he's still saying that most likely that little Atacama baby alien thing is an alien. Now, the DNA tested out human.
Yeah, it's, and unfortunately, when we were working on the Star Child skull, I didn't want to stand on Lloyd Pye's shoulders. I wanted to open this case and begin it not where he left off. He was so respected and loved, and we wanted to honor his work as his work.
Yes.
And so we opened the case as brand new set of eyes. It's a cold case, you know, just like any like police officer would have done. But the first thing I did was take it to the osteology museum, because it's a skull. I would like to have a bone specialist or a bone expert tell us, you know, about all the anomalies and all the accusations on the skull. And when we were there in the back room, and this osteology museum is in Oklahoma City, if anybody gets a chance to go there, the coolest museum ever. In the back room, he just has cabinet after cabinet with tray after tray of all of these. And he pulled out probably 40 of those little bodies that look just like Stephen Greer. They're stillborns. They're aborted.
That one was supposed to be 8 years old, though. You know, I mean, I don't know where they came up with that. The wear on the joints or something.
You see, and this is where we have to start vetting, because we have a shocking, shocking revelation that came out with the Star Child skull. We had two of them, actually. But about that baby, well, what test did you do that came out? And where's the data? Where's the thing that I can look at and be convinced that this little baby has lived 8 years of age? I want the science behind it, and yet it's a proclamation. Well, it lived to be 18 because of the lungs. Well, can I see that report? Right? And I also want to vet who did the report, and where was this study done, and how was that process handled? Because this is what we ran into with the Star Child skull. Is not everybody who claimed to be that expert turned out to be an expert. And this is very clear. So it's the same thing with that 8 years old. I want to know how they came up with that, and I want to know all of it, and I want to see it in the reports. If you're saying the wear and tear on the joint, I want to see the joint compared to a normal one. And, you know, we have to be this discerning, because these hoaxes, you know, the fairy, remember the little winged fairy hoax, and, you know, the Gaia mummies down there, and you remember the headline, DNA proves Nephilim, coming from Brian Forrester out of South America. It's like, no, it really didn't. It's completely human. So we've just heard this. We have to really start being hard on our investigators, myself included. And we have to really pay attention to what skeptics are saying. They keep us honest, and they let me know where the holes are in my case. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we decided to reveal all the testing and everything we had done with the Star Child skull, everything's up there. How many times do you see a DNA report that they didn't take away where they had it done, like it's some big secret? We're going to keep our labs to ourselves. You know, it's like, no.
No. Yeah, red flags go everywhere. Just for the listener that is not familiar, I had Lloyd Pye on my show years ago. He passed away, I think, probably 3 years ago or more, right? So Lloyd was a great guy. He had worked with what was called the Star Child skull. I think, I can't remember how that was coined, but it was something found Well, Chase, you know the whole background. It was found in a cave, I believe, with another body leaning against it or something like that. But it did have an elongated skull. You can Google it yourself, Star Child skull and Lloyd Pye, and you will see it come up. Very, very odd-looking thing. But end up, you know, the wah, wah, wah music, it was human.
It is. And, you know, Lloyd, when he was sick, he was very close with Melanie Young, who is the original owner and was always the owner of the Star Child skull. She made a promise to Lloyd that she would finish the work. And this was something that meant a lot to him when she said it to him, you know, as he was fading and becoming more and more sick. He was terminally ill. And she really took a lot of heat for opening it up. And everybody wanted Lloyd's work to be left alone. And, you know, after 2 years, it took her 2 years to say, you know what, I made that promise to him. He didn't want this to just sit on a shelf. He wanted this finished. And, you know, and in Lloyd's own words, in his own book, his goal, no matter what, where it went, he was bound to determine he just wanted the truth. Now, and
pardon me, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think what happened is when we started doing all our investigation and coming up with some of these test results, we would find out that he had the same test results. But why Lloyd would keep pushing forward with the hybrid or the alien narrative was because there were a few experts on his team that were saying this and giving him real evidence. The problem is it was fake. And if you look at the Star Child Project website, they very openly post DNA tests from Trace Labs, Bold Labs, Trace Genetics, Gary Nolan of Stanton University, who also did Greer's Adama right. baby.
Yep.
And those three DNA tests were done. All of them came out mitochondrial only because there was no nuclear extracted. But they knew that the mom was absolutely female and haplogroup C, which is Native American. So there was this fourth geneticist in the report, and this is the where you're getting the FOXP, you know, enigma discussion into this. And there's even these little graphs, but they're not real science lab graphs. They're Photoshop graphs because they're just illustrating what he means. But that's not clear right away, if that makes sense. Well, I kept wondering, well, why is this guy's stuff complete or this lab so completely different from everyone else's, including ours? And I'm telling you, Martin, you find out, and I know Lloyd did not know this, you find out that that man is not only not a geneticist, he doesn't have access to a lab. He's a virologist and he works on Lyme disease. He's a foreign national here on a work visa to study Lyme disease, and that's it. He worked at a university and was eventually terminated for unethical behavior. So, you know, and I know Lloyd didn't know this. I mean, he comes across so legit. Mm-hmm. Like, I was fooled for the, you know, first year. I'm just like, wow, like, and I'm digging into this FOXP and all that. And it doesn't even make sense. Geneticists don't even talk like that. It's not half that vocabulary isn't even in their books. I mean, people are looking at me like, where are you getting this crap? So I vetted the guy behind the science, and this is what we found. And then to find out, I'll even tell you further, the whole DNA from the Nephilim headline, this was this geneticist that was working on that DNA. Remember Melba Ketchum?
Oh, yes, Dr. Melba Ketchum.
And the Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Same DNA guy.
Uh-oh.
All these guys, oh my gosh. And then when I find all this out and this whole trail that he ruined Melba Ketchum. You know, Brian Forrester looks like, you know, a used car salesman and a fool because, you know, the big DNA proves Nephilim. Well, my first question is, well, where'd you get the comparison that you know that's Nephilim? Like,
right.
It's half exactly. Angel, half human. Like, the things coming out. So it really was a big lesson that I really like to talk to other investigators and say, guys, vet your scientist, because not all of them are who they say they are, although they present letterhead. And it's the same guy behind almost every hoax we have.
Unreal.
Yep.
I would love to name
I would love to name him and call him out. I know exactly who he is. And the only reason I don't, Martin, and you know me, this is killing me, is because I promised the Star Child Project I would not. And there are private reasons that I promised not to out why they needed me to not out this guy. And but it's killing me. I want to scream his name from the rooftops because he's been lying and really causing a lot of personal trauma with some of these good researchers. Melba was a great veterinarian.
Yes.
He ruined her. Ruined her.
Wow.
Reputation. I mean, you know, who's going to believe it? It's crazy. Terrible.
Well, if you happen to, you know, text me his name on Skype, you know, I might slip and say who it is.
I'll tell you. Keep integrity sometimes is hard. It's really, really hard because I've wanted to do that 100 times, and it may come out. It won't be for me, but there is somebody else that's kind of in this whole mix that is just so offended, completely offended, because Lloyd believed him, and Lloyd was not foolish. He was not gullible, but it was this guy was that good. You know, much like the Gaia mummies, you know, how many people, and the minute the tests don't come out, oh, it's a cover up, you know, the government's hiding that they're really, you know, so, you know, there's, so you can only tell the truth and hope people understand it.
What was, what's that phrase I heard you say again about the science? I love that phrase.
Science doesn't care what we believe.
Yeah, that's right.
I actually have patches made up of that because it's, you know, it's turned, Carrie McClure and I work together on kind of my independent projects. So, you know, I work very hard and a lot with MUFON, but I also have independent things I like to keep, you know, in my pocket. I don't put all my eggs in anyone's basket, if that makes sense. Yeah. I love MUFON, but I like to do other things too.
Yeah.
So,
I think the last time I had you on a full show, you had just come back from Peru. Was it Peru?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was pretty exciting.
We're still going down there. LA had us down there for a second time, and I have to say, Martin, I'm standing there in the back room of one of the most prestigious museums in Peru, with permission from the Ministry of Culture, who invited us to take DNA on some of their most anomalous skulls that they picked out and asked us to do.
Amazing.
And the reason, I'm a UFO investigator. I'm standing there like, how did I get here where I'm extracting DNA samples? You know, and most people don't realize there's no certification for evidence collection. The certification and college degrees come with the processing of it. But anybody can pick up evidence. Now, if it's worthy or viable in a lab, you know, you've got to do it right. You have to know what you're doing. But you don't have to have... Right. You don't have to have a degree. Anybody can do this. And I just really like it. So I've honed in my skills and really did a lot of training and a lot of study and figured out, you know, how to make this happen. And I now have well over 300. I probably have about almost 400 forensic samples that have produced perfect results from laboratories. It's crazy.
Now, let me ask you something. I've always heard that DNA testing can be very expensive.
It is.
And I don't know if you can even throw a number out there, for instance, what it costs for the Star Child. But who would fund something like that?
We did. Or I better phrase, my husband pays for it. And because I don't work. like, I don't have a job that pays money. This is what I do. And Melanie and Carrie, this is all out of our pocket. The Star Child Project became a corporation, and they needed to because there were books and movie deals and all this, and they take donations. And but I've never done that, and I don't want to. I think for an investigator to be paid, somebody wants something in return.
Yes.
And this way, we completely keep the integrity of just dispassionate look, a scientific method, transparent in every single thing, including who exactly touched that sample. We want the public to have everything. So no, we've never accepted a dime, never. And that's why it took so long to get it done as well, because, you know, I try to sell books. You know, I wrote a book called Admissible with Richard Dolan. You know, just you try to speak at conferences and, you know, every once in a while they're very generous with an honorarium. Everything we do goes right back into the next test or, you know, so we try to get out there and do some things to help. But and we had very generous people. Oh, my gosh, Martin, people offered to give us money and we just couldn't take it from the public. We had to maintain that 100%. You know, on our own, we had to. And people were so generous. I mean, imagine turning down a $10,000 offer.
Right.
Chase, I'll pay for the DNA. And we just couldn't do it. We had to do it on our own and scrape pennies and, you know, almost mow lawns for my neighbors. I was getting desperate. I didn't care. I didn't care anymore. But we made it happen. It worked.
I wish our government would do that instead of have the campaign stuff going
on. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Be a lot straighter, wouldn't it? Yeah. So this is interesting. It came back after all this time. As how many years? How long ago did Lloyd first start working on this?
It was by the time I got the skull. This had been in his camp and in his hands for almost 20 years. He devoted all of his life. He was actually a Bigfoot researcher, and he loved the study of human origins. And once he got the Star Child skull, it just kind of captivates you. And I see how that could happen. I have the skull here.
You have the skull?
One of the first things we did was mold it, because what I wanted was a photograph perfect copy of the Star Child available. Because at this point, we already knew that this Star Child was at least half Native American. Oh my gosh, Martin, everything stopped. There's huge red lights. Native American remains must be honored. And you
Absolutely.
Cannot display profit from transport. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. You know, when we started looking into the laws, we were up against a rock and a hard place.
Serious trouble.
So we wanted to make sure that the Star Child skull was always going to be available to study, at least externally, with other people. I mean, there are Inca bones, there are concussion fractures. There's a lot of things on the Star Child skull that would really provide a lot of information in the future. So we wanted to have that done. So we brought it down to Texas, and Joe Taylor, world premier museum molder and model maker, he does all the big T-Rexes and, you know, everything. And we had him do a photograph perfect. But yes, it's on my shelf.
Can you actually, for the YouTube watcher, can you actually go grab it? Or is it something that's, why don't you go grab it and bring it over to the camera?
Okay.
I'll change the screen right now for a second. All right, everyone, while she is going to, she's going to do that, we're going to be talking in the second hour she is going to talk about the triangle and a few other things, investigation she's working on and all that. And now she's back. So, all right, everyone. So thanks for listening today. And thanks for listening to the free shows. Now, if you do want to subscribe for $2 or more a month, you'll get to listen to us at the Shag Harbor event coming up this Saturday. That's only for members only as far as the podcast goes. But if you want to listen to it for free, you can listen to it live. And that's this coming Saturday, the 30th at 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. It's also going to be on YouTube afterwards, so you can always check it out there too. Our guest next week is Caroline Corey, and we'll be back then. Thanks again, everyone. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.